Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started right.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour and happy Monday. It is August 7th and we are headed into another new week. And as summer clicks away, let's make the most of it because here in the upper Midwest, for sure, we really covet our nice weather because we know what's coming. So I spent a lot of the weekend kind of studying the first 11 chapters of Joshua. Boy, was that fun. I just had a great time. And now I've been looking at Hebrews the last week or two as well. And I'm in chapter 4 where it says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." We need help and we can go right to him who is not unable to sympathize with what we are struggling with today. So whatever you're looking at this week, take it to God and say, God, I know you can identify with what I have in front of me. You have been tempted in every way, and you remain sinless. And I need your strength today, because I don't know what you've got on your plate today, but if it's a busy, important meeting or an appointment or something that's got you very stressed out, I just can want to let you know God is going to be there for you, and he's already gone ahead through the power of the Holy Spirit and will give you strength to face whatever it is you are looking at. All right? There's my little note of confidence that comes from God's Word. We live in a world of 7 billion people. I don't think what anybody needs is another opinion. I think we need the Word of God, and that's why hopefully you turn into Faith Radio. All right, speaking of our day, we've got Patrick Albanese, my friend from and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. He'll be on the program in just a minute, and we look over the headlines from the weekend and process them for you. And then also Bruce Ashford, Dr. Bruce Ashford, is going to come on just after Patrick, and we're going to talk to him as well this morning. So we have a great first hour coming up. Stay tuned. We're going to be back in just a minute. It's 6 minutes after the hour.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
My Monday mornings are always happy because I get to talk to my friend and colleague Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, good morning. Hey.
Good morning. I love how, you know, just a moment ago you're saying, you know, in the world of 7 billion people, who needs one more opinion? Let me call my friend and get his.
Yeah. Well, let's start off a little on the light side. God bless the city of Baltimore. They said, all right, here's the deal. How about for the next 72 hours, don't murder anybody?
We've tried everything else.
It lasted exactly one day.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's kind of like my mother's philosophy is, have you said the magic word yet? Maybe they forgot to say please.
Yeah,
please
maybe. But I could just imagine some guy saying, you know, I really want to whack Jimmy the Chin, but I also want to be respectful to this wonderful initiative being done at City Hall.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, he probably just called his event planner and said, can we reschedule Jimmy the Chin? Can we make that? When is the 72 hours expire?
Oh, my gosh.
We can have Jimmy the Chin expire.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, the Nancy Reagan, just say no to drugs. And people just laughed and they said, you can't expect kids to say no to drugs. That will never work. Just say no to drugs. And then there were abstinence campaigns and they said, you can't expect kids to say no to you can't expect them to abstain. That's ridiculous. And then somebody says, hey, how about if we just try this? Just say no to murder. And somebody goes, that is the best idea I have ever heard. it just might work.
It just might work. Yeah.
They ran out of ideas.
Yeah. And just to put things in perspective, you know how time flies. In 2003 on The Tonight Show, tonight, it was at 2003, Arnold Schwarzenegger said, I'm going to run for governor.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
It's been that long.
Okay, and I of course was a resident of California at the time, and people were in that high. You know, I just found out it's not high dungeon. High dungeon is the improper use of the phrase. They would say high dudgeon. There's no N in there. A high dungeon would be more like an attic, I guess, which made me wonder why they don't just call it an attic. But anyway, people were upset because the current governor at the time, Gray Davis, had tripled the car registration rate, saying, you know, California needs money. And it appears to be in your pockets yet again.
Right.
So they tripled the registration rate. And, you know, so you're going back to 2003. And, you know, some people that were buying luxury models were being faced with a $1,500 a year registration fee for their vehicle. And people understandably got a little upset. And Schwarzenegger almost essentially was going against about 17 other candidates. Gary Coleman from Different Strokes was another one of them. He did not get the vote.
Mm-hmm, I remember that.
And I think Schwarzenegger on day one rescinded that new registration, knocked it back to its formerly usurious rate.
Yeah. And that was enough, wasn't it?
And it was, and people said, well, that's it. If he accomplishes nothing else, which he successfully did do, accomplished absolutely nothing else, then we're happy.
Yeah.
But we had a recall election, and it was when they just pushed it a little bit too far.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on to more current news. In Bloomington, Minnesota, national news story, there was a mosque which got bombed over the weekend. And the religious leader is typically in his office in the morning preparing for prayers. This is about 5 a.m. And the FBI said that the bomb was an improvised explosive device that was thrown through the window of the imam's office. So, little conspiracy theory there? Is that an inside job, or did someone know where this guy would be?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's I'll do my usual, you have to do usual caveats. If this is a true hate crime, find the guy or gal, because I don't want to be discriminatory, and throw the book at them. But most of these turn out to be fake hate crimes. We had a fire in a mosque here in Des Moines just a couple of months ago, and you know, people got into their high attic, their high dungeon, you know. And we must find, and this is a hate crime. And then it turned out that it was a woman who went to the mosque, and she was Muslim. And they said, well, we don't think she was, you know, trying to perpetrate a fake hate crime. She was just trying to make a statement. Anyway, can we just stop talking about this? And the story disappeared. And there are many of those. And I mean, Mark Dayton, your governor in Minnesota, I believe he pushed over the mayor of Minneapolis to get to the microphone first. You know, I think Betsy Hodges got shoved aside, which is in itself a hate crime. You can't shove a mayor to get to the microphone.
You can't.
He could not wait to get in front of the cameras and say, I denounce this, and this is horrible. We get into that whole thing of, see, this is that backlash. This is that backlash we warned you about. And then it turns out to be a fake hate crime, and they say, now we're really worried about backlash to the fake hate crime. And eventually, if you go 2 to 3 levels of backlash, you get Donald Trump as president.
Well, Governor Dayton said, he said, every place of worship for all Minnesotans of every faith and culture must be sacred and safe. Well, isn't the job of being sacred that of the religious organization?
And safe, you know, I thought was the job of the police department, but we found that they're not doing such a good job of that. Yeah, that's the religious organization place.
But yeah, it's not the government's mandate that they must be sacred and safe. They need to be safe, but it's the organization's job to be sacred.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things I get concerned about is, you know, you start to think, wait a minute, we essentially have a version of Sharia law happening in America, because this kind of protection, this kind of outrage would never happen if it happened at a Christian church. They would almost say, well, they have it coming. I'm not saying that the governor would run to the microphone to say that. I'm saying he wouldn't even run to the microphone. And we are very protective of the Muslim community for some reason, and CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, they are real quick to turn everything into, you know, this horrendous thing that's going to happen and that Muslims are in danger. And what has happened is now we don't allow any criticism of Islam, and we don't allow pretty – we're so close to a Sharia law. For example, if you know, if you were to take a crucifix and put it into a jar of you name it, mm-hmm. the Virgin Mary covered in dung, you'll get an NEA grant. But if you draw a picture of Muhammad in this country, you'll be lucky to be granted parole.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten that way. And you're saying, well, if our sensibilities are such that, then we're inching closer and closer to that will be the only thing that you can't criticize. And again, you know, if somebody bombed a mosque, find the guy and put him in jail.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, me either.
All right,
Patrick, we'll take a break. When we come back, North Korea vows thousandfold revenge. Let's talk about that when we return. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Good morning, everyone. Glad you're with us. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold here talking to my friend Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, all right. North Korea says we are going to seek revenge a thousandfold. And the first thing that we've done collectively is we have performed economic sanctions against North Korea to the tune of $1 billion.
Yes. $100 billion. You have your pinky.
My pinky's in the corner. Yep. And the country, they're banning coal, iron, lead, and seafood. This is when I got upset, because if I cannot get my crab claws from North Korea, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, I'm a little more concerned. If they send Dennis Rodman back, we're going to buckle. We're going to buckle, you know, like we always do. Yeah, but North Korea now supposedly has a rocket that can maybe make it to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they certainly don't seem to be afraid to just start firing off things. You know, these strongly worded letters don't seem to be doing the trick anymore. And, you know, China, we've been asking them to help for the longest time. They don't seem to want to pitch in. And you say, you know, maybe some people don't like us, and it's got nothing to do with who's in the White House. You know, I remember with Bill Clinton basically gave away the store to North Korea, and that didn't do any good. And you know, we've had this soft diplomacy or the leading from behind and all these other things that it's almost like saying to the bully, you know what I'm going to do? Before you ask for my lunch money, I'm just going to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to give you the lunch money, and then you won't beat me up. And pretty soon he's going to say, you know, I kind of want to punch you anyway. So I don't know if the only thing left for us is this real show of strength. I mean, sanctions will help a little bit, but can we do this alone? Can we start getting into these messes alone?
No, we can't, and we shouldn't. And North Korea is they're a mess. I mean, something does need to be done about them.
Yeah. However, they are living a very green lifestyle, because without the electricity there, they're not burning a whole lot of coal, and so. For some of our friends that are more concerned about saving the planet for their grandchildren, even though they don't have any children, well, I guess that's the lifestyle they want for all of us. Boy, mm-hmm. Oh boy, it seems to they're so backwards. But here we are. We're in a confrontation with a backwards country.
Yeah.
And everybody's throwing their hands up, saying, "Well, we're not going to help you."
Like, yeah.
Okay.
So the president takes his 17-day vacation, but he goes to New Jersey.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say about that.
Well, I mean, he is a New Yorker.
Yeah,
so
that's
that
true.
Is kind of a vacation. You know, I had a friend. He still lives in Parsippany, New Jersey, near Lake Hiawatha. And when I would visit him, he says, you know, we would take a trip and it would just be to the Jersey Shore. He's like, we don't leave New Jersey. So New Jersey people are – I don't know if they – it's like, do you ever meet anybody from New Jersey? I mean, either they're not allowed to leave the state or they just don't want to.
Yeah.
It's actually very beautiful state. If you've ever been.
No, New Jersey is beautiful. It really is.
I was absolutely stunned. I was like, wait a minute. People have been making jokes about this place for my entire life, and it's gorgeous here.
No, it is.
Absolutely beautiful.
It is. What do you think about Lieutenant General Kelly so far? You think he's cleaning up, bringing law and order to the White House?
It sure seems to be. The tweeting seems to have subsided a wee tad.
Mm-hmm.
I think, we love him to catch these leakers. Of course you'd love him to catch the leakers. But discipline has been, let's just say, not Donald Trump's calling card. And discipline of message and discipline of, you remember from his speeches, he was all over the place, like I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
And but if Kelly can get him on task, on message, because very quietly, even though the Republican Congress has exposed themselves to be do nothing and just a horrific disappointment, we say, oh my gosh, those were all show votes for the last 8 years. You guys never had any intention of repealing Obamacare. Never. You just used it as a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't passed much, but Trump is quietly getting stuff done. He's slashing regulations. That it's like the little stuff. It's not just laws. You don't just need have these massive boondoggles of healthcare. It's some of the other things that just make life a little bit easier, for somebody to run a business. And Trump has been very pro-business in that regard, and he's getting a lot done quietly behind the scenes because nobody wants to, no pun intended, trumpet those accomplishments. But if Kelly can get him back on message, maybe we can get some of the big things like tax reform done and fix this mess of healthcare, because rates are about to go back up.
Yeah, they are. And of course, Patrick, there was a Republican donor from Virginia Beach who is suing the GOP, saying he's accusing the party of fraud over the failed Obamacare repeal. He said, I've been spending the last 7 years raising money on the promise that you're going to be able to repeal and replace Obamacare, and now you can't get it done. So he's suing to try to get his political donations back.
Yeah, I kind of think it's a clever idea. I mean, I don't know how you win with that, but it's certainly, they stopped calling me. I don't even know how they got my phone number, but I reported
gave it to them.
You gave it to
them.
Yeah,
it was me.
Yeah. Oh, you're the source of the hate mail I get.
Oh, that's personal. That comes directly from me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why it says from a concerned listener then. But yeah, I kind of love the idea. I get a bit of a chuckle out of it. I been joking that I'd like my 2008 vote for John McCain back, but Sarah Palin can keep her half of the vote.
Right.
And I don't know if my lawsuit's going to go very far. It's clever, and if they call me, I'm just like, who am I giving money to? Why should I give you guys money? You've lied for years. You're not going to do anything. And I think I might have expressed that sentiment to one of the calls, and you know what happened? The call stopped. So maybe the next time if you get a call from somebody asking for money, say, you disappoint me.
Yeah.
It worked when your mom and dad said it. Might as well work when you're –
right.
When the RNC calls.
And Warren Buffett is nearing a milestone, which he does not want. And that is, he's got $100 billion in cash.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I thought he was upset at being, knocked down the totem pole to like third or fourth richest man in the world.
Right. No, he's still got a lot of cash laying around. He doesn't like it. So those are happy problems. I wouldn't mind that for a day.
Yeah. But, do you still need to use ID when you use cash? That's going to be kind of.
That's next, unless you get that chip put in your hand.
Right. $100 billion.
Pause.
The problem is the first world. It is. It's a lot of money.
Yeah. Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show. As always, I look forward to Monday mornings with you.
Thank you.
Yep. Have a great day. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
26 minutes after the hour, we'll take a little break and be back. We've got Bruce Ashford coming up next at about 40 minutes after the hour. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 30 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with you this morning. It is Monday, August 7th. We're just talking about Warren Buffett that could have $100 billion in cash. And of course, I always go to Mark 836. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul. All right, we're going to go to news, and after that, we're going to talk to Dr. Bruce Ashford. Be back in a minute. Hello, it's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Prayer is a key element of the Christian life, and yet John Eldridge has found that a lot of Christians don't fully understand how to pray. So he shares this encouragement.
I think the big surprise is that prayer is actually something you learn, just like you learn how to read or drive a car or play an instrument. This is kind of a big idea here, because I think most people kind of look at prayer as it's something that you just kind of catch, like, you know, the measles. You just kind of do it. It just sort of happens to you, you know. And it's not a very kind approach to our own spiritual life. It puts a lot of expectation on us that somehow we ought to just know how to do it. And the first big idea is the disciples said to Jesus, teach us how to pray. Like, we want to grow in this. We want to learn in this. They obviously saw something in him. And in his prayers, they're like, hey, your prayers work. Like, show us how. And I love that. It opens up all kinds of new possibilities when you realize, oh, you mean prayer is something you learn?
Okay, that's a tease. You can hear more of that interview at myfaithradio.com. Type in the search engine Moving Mountains. That was John Eldridge. He's author and president of Ransom Heart. That's a great interview. Go check it out. We'll take a little break, and then when we come back, Dr. Bruce Ashford is with us. He's professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. One very, very, very smart man. Be back in a minute.
When I mentioned debt at a pastor's conference, that is our national debt, I was accused of being too political. I argued, no, our national debt is a biblical issue. This is Jim Garlow. If I run up a high debt, personally, someone is going to have to pay for what I've done. If it's the national debt, the next generation has to pay. There's an incredible apathy among people since the consequences seem to be far off, and after all, it doesn't affect me today in the here and now. Pastors need to instill a sense of urgency about the issue and a strong sense of morality to go against the tide of entitlement thinking of, I want it and I want it now. On the positive side, paying one's debt is biblical. So does our government? Do you have any intention of paying off your obligations? Proverbs 37:21 reminds us, the wicked borrow and do not repay. Be well versed at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning, 24 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Bruce Ashford is provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. I get him on the show as often as I can and whenever he's available. And I think he's on the studio line right now. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. I watched your incredibly interesting panel last night you had on the Benedict option. And I thought, oh, but you were by far the best person on the panel. And then I thought, this will be so interesting to talk to Bruce with in the morning. And then, of course, I get up this morning, I can't remember a thing you said.
Yeah, probably because you fell asleep halfway through.
I didn't. But it was so interesting, and I do want to talk about that this morning. David Brooks talks about Rod Dreher's book as the most discussed and most important religious book of the decade. Rod Dreher begins the book by exhorting the Christian church to strengthen itself while there's still time. So, big question, how can Christians best respond to a situation in which historic Christian belief and practice is increasingly marginalized?
Yeah, so, you know, I want to, let me draw upon a sociologist really quickly. I did in the video, too, to sort of explain the situation that Dreher says we're dealing with here in America, and probably many of us who are listening to your show can feel what Reef is saying. So there was a great Jewish-American sociologist who about 10 years ago, right before he passed away, published a trilogy, three really big academic volumes, assessing American society and culture. What he basically argued is that many of America's cultural elite, which he calls the officer class, have engaged in a project to basically sideline God,
mm-hmm.
and take God seriously, and to sideline and marginalize us, and to try to create a society and a culture where God and His Word are not influential, basically just to push them to the margins.
Wow.
And in some ways, they've succeeded.
Mm-hmm, they have.
Dreher's saying, listen, it's been a rout. All of our political activism, all the stuff we've done, we've lost. We needed to stop putting our eggs in the basket of political activism and put them in the basket of strengthening the church. And so that's what his book is about,
mm-hmm.
is for the church to strengthen its own muscles and to stop worrying so much about politics.
Okay. Now, I would guess you would say yes and no to that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, so so here's where I agree with him. He's exactly right that evangelical Christians, Bible-believing Christians, have increasingly been decentered and marginalized for decades now. I think the sexual revolution was really the big beginning of it, and it's marched progressively, no pun intended,
mm-hmm.
Over the past 5 or 6 decades. And so he's right about that. One of the things that we haven't done is really the church has not strengthened itself. It seems that the church is actually weaker. And so he's right. We need to find some ways to sort of not entirely withdraw. He's not saying to withdraw completely, but to build our muscles, to
mm-hmm.
teach our children, and to prepare them for what's coming. For when they, you know, go to school and people look at them like lepers because
mm-hmm.
of their beliefs. For when we get, you know, put in prison for preaching, hateful beliefs, you know, like our beliefs about sexual morality. He's saying we need to get ready. Where I don't agree with him is I don't think that means that we have to reduce our political involvement. I think what we ought to do is strengthen both of those at the same time. And so that's my point when I offer what I call an Abrahamic alternative, which is, you know, a ridiculous title, Abrahamic alternative to a Benedict option. But I was playing off of the name of Abraham Kuyper, who was a pastor turned politician in the Netherlands who called the church in the Netherlands to strengthen itself during a time of great secularization at the same time that he was telling them to be more politically involved.
Bruce, let me ask you, because I kind of agree with you. I think it's important that we strengthen the church and also stay involved politically. And I think I would guess a lot of our listeners would probably agree. But when you participated in this panel, which was actually quite fascinating, I think we're going to be able to put the link up on the website because I know our listeners will maybe be interested as well in this. There was a lot of about 30 minutes of questions and answers. And really the question that was posed at this panel was, how can Christians best respond to a situation where historic Christian beliefs and practice is being marginalized socially, culturally, and politically? What were some of the questions that that really got your attention?
I'm trying to remember what all of them were. I know one of them, I think one of the questions was sort of aimed at me, so of course I remember it.
Sure.
And the guy, I had used the phrase political activism several times. And the guy came back and said, you know, political activism gives you this picture of people standing around with, you know, sandwich boards on their body, shouting at people, and we just don't need to be involved with that. And so I would agree if that's what, you know, if that's what we mean by political activism, I mean, that's a very limited form of political engagement, political involvement that's not always so helpful. But what I would come back is I use the phrase political activism because that's what Rod Dreher uses in his books. I just mean political involvement. And I think our political involvement needs to be something a lot deeper and more profound, a lot more holistic than this sort of anger factory that the U.S. is right now. Everyone's outraged about everything. Everyone wants to protest everything. You know, it's just wearisome. So
mm-hmm.
tired of it. What we mean by political involvement is something, much broader. So if you have a minute, I could talk about that.
Yeah, we do, actually.
Okay. Yeah, so I think the question for us here in the States is how can we give a powerful public witness from a position of political weakness? I don't think any presidential election in the next 20 years is going to keep our society from sliding further and further away from Bible-believing Christianity. It's a cultural problem. That's something that politics cannot fix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, politics is one realm of culture. You know, you got art, science, education, politics, business, sports, you know, all of these different realms of culture, and we're going to have Christian witness in every one of those realms if we're going to help our nation sort of come back to the center. Okay, so politics doesn't fix it. But what are some things we can do politically, you know, when we're speaking publicly about public matters? One thing I think we can do is find appropriate ways to call attention back to the King, the cosmic King, the King of the world, God himself. And there's a couple of ways of doing that. One is to remind ourselves that the MSNBC or CNN or Fox narrative of the world is not the true story of the whole world. The way that they frame things is not the right way to frame things. That the Bible's narrative, its overarching story, is what should frame the way we look at things. We got to remind ourselves of that. You know, when you sit there in your house with the TV on to a certain news channel for 18 hours a day, then their view of the world and their story of it begins to shape you more than the Bible.
Mm.
And your poor pastor has 1 hour to try to fix that on Sunday. You know?
Exactly.
Poor adult. You know, is what I feel about myself when I'm preaching and trying to reverse what people have seen on television for 18 hours a day. I think another thing we can do is to make clear that our ultimate allegiance is to Christ, not to a particular political party or platform or ideology. It's not wrong to be involved in a political party. I am. But we got to find ways of reminding people that that's not what's ultimate for us. And then I listed three other things. I don't know how much time we have, but I think while we're putting God back at the center and in the spotlight, we need to take ourselves out of the spotlight. And there's a lot of different ways we can do that. And I think one of them is to quit being jerks.
Mm-hmm.
Christians often put ourselves in the spotlight in kind of a toxic way, and we fight political fights with the same kind of nastiness that everyone else does, lie about our opponents, demean them, degrade them, question their motives when we don't have any evidence. Another thing we can do is we can reframe political issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a Christian is going to reframe pro-life, the pro-life issue, in a way that an unbeliever who is pro-life couldn't or wouldn't. And then the last thing is, I say revitalize culture. And basically, what I mean there is that Christians need to find ways to enter into the different spheres of culture, art, science, education, sports, business, wherever God takes us, wherever our path leads during the week, we need to find ways of making sure that we're a witness to the Lord and that we influence those places and those areas of culture in a distinctively and helpfully Christian way.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, I have to tell you, this is why I have you on the show, and this is why I send you those complimentary gas station coffee coupons.
Thank you so much for that.
Because this is so solid, and I assume you're receiving them. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your book, One Nation Under God, because this is where you put it all together so soundly. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Ashford. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know. And all the people.
Good morning. It's 11 minutes until the top of the hour. I have Dr. Bruce Ashford on the line, and I get him as often as I can. His book, one of the many books he's written, One Nation Under God, helps us to engage intelligently in the world. And Bruce, talk, if you would, some more about declaring the gospel in public circles and trying to do it. Speaking it into our lives, regardless of what kind of profession we're in and how we stand up for biblical truth.
Yeah, so I think one helpful way, if somebody's just sort of listening on the way to work today or maybe at home over a cup of coffee and thinking, all right, you've just told me that things are going really badly here in the United States of America, or Marca, as they say.
Marca.
You know, what can I do about it? You know, I'm just an ordinary American. I go to my job every day, or I take care of, my kids. I'm raising my kids. What can I do? And I'd say there's a lot that we can do. So let me list again for just a moment the different, what I call, spheres of culture.
Okay.
Each one of them very significant. Number one, family. Everyone can do something in that sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, church. And then, down on from out there, the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Sciences, education, politics and economics, business and entrepreneurship. If you work at a job, you're working at a business, most likely. Many people are. So all of these different spheres are, I think, are God-given realms of human activity. And if each of us plays our role and does what the Lord wants us to do, then our combined witness and even our combined influence will be pretty amazing. So what I encourage Christians to do is anytime we enter into one of these spheres of culture, we can have three questions in mind. And if we can ask these questions and begin to answer them and act on them, then God only knows the influence that we could have and the witness we could have. So the first question, whatever sphere of culture you're in, you want to ask, what is God's creational design for this realm of human activity? Any of those that I just mentioned? The Bible doesn't always tell us directly. You know, it does tell us directly why the family exists and why the church exists.
Mm-hmm.
It does not speak as directly to some of the other areas of culture. So we have to reason from the scriptures. What would God want from this realm of human activity? Number two, how has this realm of activity or this sphere been corrupted by human sin and idolatry? What are the mm-hmm. different ways that human sin has really sent this thing in the wrong direction, corrupted it, poisoned it? And then the third question is, in light of how it's been poisoned and corrupted and misdirected, how can I bring healing and redirection to this realm? And those questions are fairly easy to ask, but they're not always easy to answer. But I'm convinced that any Christian who reads their Bible and prays and asks God for wisdom is going to find some real answers to those questions for each sort of area of activity that they've got in their life. And I think the combined effect of our witness, if Christians looked at their lives in this manner, the combined effect of our witness would be amazing. So the Bible talks about religion, and we've talked about this on this show before, but to mention it again, the Bible talks about religion and relates it to the heart over 800 times. And the point that the Bible is making when it relates something to the heart is that the heart is, when the Bible talks about the heart, it's talking about the innermost recesses of who we are. The place deep inside of us that organizes the way we think and feel about things. And the Bible is saying that's what religion does. It embeds itself deeply inside of us and organizes the way we think. It organizes the way we feel about mm-hmm. things even. And a person's heart is either going to be pointed toward Christ or away from Christ toward a false god. And if it's pointed toward Christ, then it's basically true north. But if it's pointed, if it's directed toward an idol, then that misdirection, the fact that our heart is oriented in the wrong direction, is going to corrupt every area of cultural activity we're involved in. It's going to corrupt our family. It's going to corrupt our church involvement, our involvement in art and in leisure and entertainment, our workplace. It's going to corrupt those things. And so first we have to look inward toward ourselves and make sure that our own heart is pointed directly toward Christ. And then when we walk into these areas of culture, then we can help redirect those realms of culture. Does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense. And I'm so much in my student mode right now where I'm just sitting here taking notes as fast as I can, because this is always what you bring to the show, which I love. But I'm just trying to figure out this wonderful advice you've just given. So we have to figure out a way to cultivate wisdom for our lives.
Yes.
So say more about that, if you would, because I think that's where we bump up against culture and we run into trouble.
Yeah, you're right. Wisdom is the word of the day. I think it is. Wisdom is more than knowledge. When the Bible talks about wisdom, it's not just talking about, you know, comprehending facts about the world. Wisdom goes beyond knowledge. And, in fact, a person can be a very wise person, and have a lot less knowledge than the person next to him. The person next to him is, you know, very smart, has lots of knowledge, but is a fool. And the Bible always says there's kind of two paths, path of wisdom and a path of folly. And the path of wisdom is one where we are on our knees praying for God to help us to understand not only the facts of the world and the situation, but what is the best way forward in light of those facts. And I think we're in a situation in the United States that's very different from 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual revolution and just the overall secularity of our society has advanced to such a stage that we're not exactly sure how to react to everything. speaking for myself, if we just centered in on politics for a minute, I just have been a little bit unsure of what to do over the past 2 years. I was in a situation where I was very unexcited about both candidates for the presidential election. And I think that's the sort of thing that's going to happen often in the future. I don't think we're going to have, you know, probably not going to have easy decisions in the future, and we're going to need wisdom. And God is the giver of wisdom, and he's not going to keep it from us. He's not up there saying, ha, 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 I think I'll keep my son Bill from being wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll pray for it, but I won't give it to him. So if we pray for it, God will give it to us.
I love that encouragement, Bruce. I just, I actually just love having you on the show. You should see my notes. I got a whole page of notes here.
Well, listen, brightens my day. I love getting my day started by coming on the show with you. You all have such a smart show, and I think pastoral. You encourage people to love the Lord and walk in his way, walk in the way of wisdom. So I'll keep, you know, sending you $50 a week, bribing you to bring me back on the show if you keep bringing me back on the show.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Bruce.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
That was Dr. Bruce Ashford was my guest. And you're going to want to hear that again. Go to myfaithradio.com. We'll have that podcasted later in the day. You can pass that on to a friend because there's some good stuff there. And if you were driving and didn't have a chance to take notes like me, I could photocopy you my notes. But I can't even read my own handwriting. We'll take a break and be right back. Thanks for being with us this morning. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Dr. Bruce Ashford, what a cool guy. And my friend Patrick Albanese, we had some fun this morning as well. We've got a great second hour coming up with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, and Dr. Richard Land is going to be with us. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.